today's staff is Sadi Zayin. We're going to start, we'll just review very quickly. We had a Mishnah that we were focusing on the first part. Yarech shenit bashel bagid anasheh. Im yesh babeno teitam arezo asura. If you cook the gid anasheh still in the thigh, then if you taste the flavor, and we're going to get a lot into nitinat tam, how you know, etc., then it's asura. So Shmuel says that's only if it's cooked. Notice the Mishnah says it's cooked. Cooked means with liquid boiled up. But if it was roasted, then we assume that it doesn't all get mixed up, the flavors. And then, nitzlaba kolef v'ochel achmigia lagid, which we kind of mentioned, although I'll go a bit more into it. There's a bit of a debate here, because how could you say it sounds like you can eat up until the gid, all the meat is allowed. But in other sugyas, we see that there's either what's called kedei klipa, which is you have to take off a very thin layer, as if you peel off a layer. There's also an option of kedei netila, which is the width of a one finger's breadth. So it seems like another sugyo, that would be the case. So according to Tosfot, that's actually what Shmuel means. He doesn't mean eat it up until the gid. He means almost up until the gid, either kedei netila or kedei klipa, but not everybody says that. So then the Gemara asks, we'll start from there, two lines from the bottom. Ini, v'hama Rav Huna, is it really true that you can eat ad shmigia l'gid? Doesn't Rav Huna say, gidish etzla'o b'chelbo asur le'echol afilu me'roshos? No. Here, forget about kedei klipa and kedei netila. You can't even eat from the ear, which isn't even close to the chelev. So the answer, shana chelev dem fa'apeah. And then we already mentioned yesterday, what about the shuman of the gid? But we're going to leave that aside for today. So now the Gemara questions this. U'b'chelev asur? Is it really asur mishum chelev? In a case of chelev, v'hama rabba bar bar chana uvda hava kamed rabbi yochanan. There was a case that came before rabbi yochanan. B'knishten, the Beit Knesset de ma'on, of ma'on. B'gdish etzla'o b'chelbo. Here's the exact case. B'gdish etzla'o b'chelbo, which we just said a minute ago, that Rav Huna said is asur le'echol, even from the top of its ear. Va'atu v'shailu l'Rabbi Yochanan. So they asked. They roasted this gedi with its chaylev. They came and asked the question of Rabbi Yochanan. Va'amar kolef ochel ad shemegiel l'chalbo. He said exactly like Shmuel that you can actually peel away the. You know, you can kind of. Well, the word kolef is strange use here because it doesn't mean kedei klipa, but it means right. Cut away the meat, and you can eat all the meat until you get to where the chaylev is. Again, Tosfot would say kedei klipa or kedei netila. So what's the answer? How could this possibly be? This seems to contradict Rav Huna. So they're going to give you three possible answers about what exactly the case was. The first option to say, Hahu kachushava. It was very lean, which means the fat wasn't very much, which means it wouldn't be mefa'apea, right, and get absorbed all into the meat. That's one option. Rav Huna bar Yehuda amar, kulia bechelba hava, visharya. It was a kidney with its chelev. If you remember, we talked about the kidney, that the membrane around it is chelev, is considered chelev, is also mishum chelev. So that's not really fat, that's a membrane. So the membrane wouldn't be absorbed, right? That wouldn't be a case of mefa'apea.
It says that the membrane keeps the fat from being absorbed.
You know? Right. It also prevents the fat, right? It kind of creates this barrier, and it prevents the fat from being absorbed. And Ravin Barav Adamar, kilbit bi'ilfas hava. So, Rashi says kilbit is sheketz dagim ktanim, beilfas shel basar. Okay, it was a case of, it wasn't a case of a gdi shetzla'o b'chalbo. Okay, it was a totally different case. It was a case of these dagim that were in, dagim tme'im, that were in meat. A pot of meat. Va'ata shailu l'Rabbi Yochanan. And then, that's really what he's saying, is you totally got the case wrong, okay? It wasn't gedish etzla'o b'chalbo, and it wasn't that the answer he gave was kolef ochel ad shemegiel l'chalbo. It was a totally different story. It was kilbit b'ilfas. It was these non-kosher fish that were cooked in a pot of meat. Va'atu shailu l'Rabbi Yochanan, and they asked him what the story is. Va'amar lehu litame kfeila aramai. You should have a non-Jewish chef taste it. And if he says that it doesn't taste like the fish, doesn't have a fishy taste to it, then you can eat it. Okay, now first of all, what do you see here? You see a few things, right? So number one, we just say, oh, therefore there's no question because it was a totally different case. Seems strange they got all the details of the case wrong, except for, I guess, that they asked Rabbi Yochanan the question. that part they had, right? It's interesting that they say, ask a chef, right? Does this mean that you can't ask, okay, we're going to see this Kfeil Aramai, it's going to come up in other cases. Is it specifically a chef, because we assume the non-Jewish chef knows the tastes? Or was that just the case where they asked a non-Jewish chef, but really they could have asked any non-Jew? And we're going to talk about this whole thing about a non-Jew. Rashi points out, let's read it in the... If you look at Rashi Litame Kfeila, he says, Nachtom ove kochavim. Nachtom is actually a baker. It seems weird here to say a baker. It must have just been a general term for a chef. Vashmu'inan dimutar lismoch alav lefi tumo. This is a classic terminology they use with non-Jews, which is, right, remember, they were very suspect of non-Jews in their times, trying to mess up Jews in all different ways, and maybe also because of the effects of Christianity and, you know, the fears of missionaries. And just, you know, defectors and things like that. So they're always nervous that the non-Jew is going to lie to mess up the Jews. So therefore, it's only lefi tumo, which means that he was saying it, oh, this doesn't taste like fish at all, as a general statement, but not because he thought it had anything to do with Isra v'Heter for us. If he knows it has something to do with for us, and you're asking him a halachic question, you know, again, it's not a halachic question, it's you're asking him for halachic purposes, then it's not really allowed, because we're worried that here Rashi says even at the end, v'lo yodi'uhu, and don't tell him, shetzrichim lo l'davar isor v'heter. That's how much they were suspect of the non-Jews, right? So don't ask him in a way that he knows this has to do with whether it's isor v'heter, because there was a concern he would lie. But if he says it l'fi tumo, it comes up, by the way, with all sorts of eduyot of non-Jews, where we say if they're mesiach l'fi tumo, if they're saying it, you know, for some other issue, and that gives us testimony about something else, then we can rely on them. There's certain cases where they accept a non-Jew, even shelo lefi tumo, but a lot of the cases they use this terminology. And again, it can be very much understood in the historical context that they were living in.
They also must, I think, make the assumption that it's sort of not fish, because there's a fish and meat issue. I don't know whether it was they had thought of it at that in those days, but
maybe they're little fishes, the fish bones, it's not the fish.
But the way we separate, you know, the way if you were to eat treif meat, it would be considered at least parv, it wouldn't be considered basar. I wonder whether this is sort of also at that point considered not fish, so you don't have any issue.
No, but it's non-kosher fish.
Right.
I'm
confused. If you eat non-kosher meat,
right,
you have a problem of having eaten non-kosher meat.
Yeah.
But you're not also fleshic. Right? It's considered parv. It's considered sort of not itself. I wonder whether they had the minhag of not mixing fish and meat in those days, and therefore that also would be considered to be not fish.
Right, probably. I mean, it would probably be counted as meat. If the fish is batel, then the fish is batel, and it's meat.
But does nobody? I don't think this is like us cooking lobster with stew. Like, this is a crazy concept.
But again, this is what kashrut is all about. That if it's not notein tam, okay, and we're going to discuss how this netina tam develops over time. Because right now it seems like, right, how do we assess notein tam? Shishim. We say, oh, shishim is the classic shi'or for netina tam, right? We're going to talk about this a little more in terms of halacha lamaaseh, what we do. But you're going to see the development here. It kind of starts with have someone else taste it to see, right?
Because nowadays, you throw out the whole restaurant. I mean, you know, if you found this, it would be crazy.
Right, I guess. But again, if halachically, you don't really have to if it's batel b'shishim, you know. If you have 60 kenegdo, you know, which we say, or if nobody tastes it. Okay, Amar Rava, Meresh Hava Kakashili, Haditanya, Kderasha Bishelba Basar, Loiva Shelba Chalav, Vimishelba Benotain Tan. Okay, so he says, in the beginning I was confused by this. What does it say in the Braita? If you cook in a pot, basar, so you can't cook in it chalav, Vimishel Benotain Tan. But if he already did it, then we do Benotain Tan. Truma lo yivashel b'chulin v'im bishel b'notein tam. If you have a pot of truma, this is interesting. You have a pot of truma. You have a pot that truma was cooked in. You can't cook chulin in it because the truma will give taste to the right. The truma gets absorbed into the pot, and then right, this is basically talking about. Maybe I wasn't clear when I said the first case. If basar was cooked in the pot, meaning, in our terminology, it's a fleshich pot, you can't cook milk in it, right? And what will happen if you did cook milk in it? So the meat flavor that goes into the milk, right, will make the milk not kosher. Again, only if it gave there was enough meat to give flavor to the, you know, it's in the pot to give flavor to the, that was absorbed into the pot to give flavor to the milk. Likewise, you have a pot of truma. You can't use it for cooking chulin, because then that chulin will have a status of truma, and then it will be forbidden to non-kohani. And if you did, again, it will be asher b'no taintam. This will be considered truma b'nitinatam. Now, what's the difference between the two? Basar b'chalav is forbidden to everybody, and truma chulin is only forbidden to a zar, not to a kohen. So, now he says like this. Bishlama truma taim la kohen. How do you, now the problem is with this brayta, how do you get what b'no taintam is? How do you know? So I understand truma, a kohen can, remember he said in the beginning, I didn't understand this brayta. So what didn't he understand about? So he understood the truma part. What do you do? How do you know if there's no taintam? You ask a kohen to taste it. Okay? Ela basar v'chalav man taim le. But if you have basar v'chalav, how are you going to assess netinatam? So now he said, so originally, remember he started out, originally I was confused by this. But hasha da'am Rabbi Yochanan, now that I just heard what Rabbi Yochanan said in the previous case, samchinan akfeil aramai, that he said we can rely on a non-Jewish chef, hachanami samchinan akfeil aramai. Okay? So there he says, now I know that we, in order to assess netinatam and basar b'chalav, we give it to a non-Jewish chef. Now, if you want to claim that he means only a that means here only a chef, here's the argument against. Because when it comes to a kohen, we allow any kohen and not necessarily a chef. So either you say that we distinguish between non-Jews and Jews, and Jews we could trust anyone, but a non-Jew we want to know specifically that he's a professional. Maybe that will make his professional opinion more professional, right? Maybe a chef wouldn't lie about these things. You know, he's more likely to be honest because it's his job on the line. I don't know who's exactly going to catch him on this, but maybe that. Or you say, right, then, or you have to come up with some other reason to say, no, really we need a kfeil aramai, but maybe we want to try to find, you know, maybe there weren't so many kohanim chefs. So if you, I don't know. In other words, it's hard to say. In other words, or else you maybe you say, kfeil aramai was just an example, and really it could be any non-Jew. Okay, and there are people who say that halacha lemaaseh, you can rely on any non-Jew. It doesn't have to specifically be an expert. Amar Rava. I think it's the Masoret HaShas takes out the lamed, the dalet here. It just should be Amar Rava. Rava made this statement now. Amar Rabbanan b'ta'ama, v'amar Rabbanan b'kfeila, v'amar Rabbanan b'shishim. So now we're going to all of a sudden introduce shishim. Some cases, the rabbi said, with taste. Some cases, the rabbi said, have a non-Jew taste it. And some people said, in some cases, the rabbi said, shishim. So, now we have to have an explanation. Hilkach. Mim b'she'eno mino. If you have two different types of things, like basar and chalav, okay, right, as opposed to two pieces of meat, let's say, that's mim b'mino. Right, we're always, if you remember, we had a whole long sugya we're going to get back to about mim b'mino. If you have two of the different types, dehetera b'tama. So then we say, right, what's the problem? If you have two pieces of meat, you won't be able to tell the difference in taste of meat. They're both meat. So you can't use netinatam. So what do? You say b'tama. Okay? So you can taste it. Again, depending on whether you can taste it, right? So that's only, but that's mim b'she'eno mino of hetera. Meaning, what's hetera? Either truma b'chulin, which is mutar for a kohen to taste. What else could be a good example? I'll give you two other examples. A nazir can't drink wine. Let's say wine drops into a tavshil of something. And so then he can ask a regular Jew who's not a nazir to taste it. So when there's an option for a Jew to taste it, another example, by the way, somebody swears, I'm never going to eat some item, right? I'm never going to eat milk. And then the milk drops into something else. So again, a Jew can taste, right? Assuming it doesn't fall into basar, it falls into some sort of concoction. So that's min b'she'eno mino of hetera. So that we go by ta'ama. We ask some Jew to taste it, and that's how we know. De isura, if it's min b'she'eno mino, two different items of isura, b'kfeila, then you have a non-Jew. you know, again, whether it's an expert chef or whether it's just any non-Jew, again, assumption is it has to be Mesiach Lefi Tumo, has to be that he just kind of says it, not that you asked him or you ask him, but you don't make it in clear that it's for halachic reasons that you need it. Umim bimino, delay kalameka matama, okay, what about a case of mim bimino, two of the same type items, where we can't rely on tasting it? Inami, mim b'she'enu mino di'isura deleka kfela, or what if we can't find a non-Jew who can taste it? So if we have two different items, now this is teaching you that, here, let me just finish the line, b'shishim. Shishim is sort of in the Gemara a last resort, right? We use shishim all the time. That's what everybody always says. Oh, it's batal b'shishim. But in the Gemara, and this is very classic, the way things develop, that first we start with, really, did it give taste? So now how do you know if it gave taste? So first of all, it has to be two different types. That's all, right? Otherwise, you won't tell taste. Taste won't be a factor. And you try to taste it if it's possible. If it's not possible, you give it to a non-Jew. But when you can't give it to a non-Jew, or it's mim bimino, then we rely on shishim. Okay, so shishim is really, interestingly, more of a last resort here. So I want to just read the Shulchan Aruch on this. So there's an interesting machloket, Mechaber and Rama in the Shulchan Aruch here. So in Yoridei Tzadichet, first, this is Din Isur Shenitarev Beheter, Ve'ofen Bitulo. By the way, what I didn't mention here, which is one very clear halachic thing, which is Eim Evatlin Isur L'chatchila. This is only if something falls in. You can't ever put something in and say it will be batal b'shishim. Okay, that's another important concept to get. So he starts off and says, "Isur shenitarev beheter mim b'she'enu mino kegon chalav shenitarev bebasar yitamenu ove kochavim." Okay, he says classic, just like our Gemara, right? You go with a non-Jew. Im omer she'en bo tam chalav o omer she'yesh bo elashu pagum, right? It makes it taste bad. Then mutar. That's only if it's going to make it taste bad now, and it won't eventually make it taste good. So he paskins it, like Rashi said, that has to be Mesiach Lefi Tumo. So he says exactly like our Gemara. Comes the Rama, and the Rama adds here, nohagin achshav l'smocha ovei kochavim, u'misharinan hakol b'shishim. He says, we no longer rely on this Ovei Kochavim, and everything is B'shishim. Now, what's interesting about the Rama? So first of all, it's interesting that they stopped relying on Ovei Kochavim. You know, this is also, like I said, sort of everything just became Shishim. It's just easier, right? Make one bottom line, blanket, right? Make it clear. But the other thing that's interesting is, what doesn't he relate to? What if it's Heter? Can a Jew taste it? He doesn't relate to that at all. So the Shach says that Midelo ka'amar eino hagim ashab l'smocha ti'ima. He just says eino hagim l'smocha ovei kochavim. He says mashma is dafka ovei kochavim. And that if it was a Jew, if it was a case of heter, so of course he says, you know, like the truma case isn't relevant anyway nowadays because we don't have truma, but it would be true. For example, he gives a case of someone who swears. If someone swears off of food, then he thinks that from the Rama it would be implied that you could go after Tom. So it's tricky because the Rama says two things. He says, "No, ein noagim l'smocha ovei kochavim u'misharinat hakol b'shishim." But according to the Shach, it's not really hakol b'shishim. It's only that we don't trust non-Jews, or we don't rely on that. But if it was a case where we could rely on a Jew, we would, which is interesting. But again, that's the Shach's reading. I don't think it's the only reading of the Rama. I think it's possible to read the Rama that he doesn't think we hold by any ta'ama, and that it's all b'shishim nowadays. And that's also classic in terms of the way things develop to kind of make things simpler, right? It's very hard. First of all, taste, we all know, is incredibly subjective. And this is another good example of, I think it's just a good question in general, of how subjective is halacha allowed to be? And this is a classic case where it seems to be very subjective. However, over time, it becomes more objective. Right, as time passes, it becomes very, you know, it's hard to keep with that subjectiveness because you want to kind of lay the line down and make things very clear cut. Okay, just want to see if there was anything else I wanted to add. No. Okay, so moving on. Hanu itmahatu, itmahata, I don't know how to pronounce that word, itmahata, which is yerechaim, okay? There were some thighs. Di'imlichu beresh galuta begida neshaya. They salted them while the gida neshe was still inside. Okay, these are all the classic sugyas of kashrus. Salting, how is salting perceived? So Ravina, Asar. Ravina said this is Asar because it was salted with the Gira Nasheh. The assumption is the salt brings out the flavor, and the flavor got into the meat. Rav Acha Bar Rav.
Salt also brings out the blood, so you can remove it.
It also brings out the blood, but that's not the issue here, right? The issue is you were salting it to bring out the blood, but by salting it, you also, it kind of, you know, brings out the flavors.
How could we not check it before it came into this great guy's house, you know?
Check it for the Gira Nasheh?
Yeah.
Well, because the Gira Nasheh, it's not that it's not, you know, this is the question. If you, you know, it seemed like maybe people did cook things with the Gira Nasheh inside. Or, you know, in other words, they maybe took it out at a later stage. You just can't eat it. But that's the whole question. First of all, remember there was this machloket. Does it give time? Does it not give time? So you could see why maybe it wasn't necessarily removed. Although all these sugars assume it has time because that's what really they're talking about. So they didn't check out the Gira Nasheh and they salted the meat. Ravina Asar, Rav Acha Barav, also take out Rav Ash, the word Ashi, Rav Acha Barav Shari, he allowed it. Atu Shailua Lamar Barav Ashi, they went and asked him. Amar Lehu, Abba Shari, he says, my father matir this. Amar Le, Rav Acha Barav Le Ravina. So now Rav Acha Barav goes to Ravina and says, my da'atech, what were you relying on to forbid it? De Amar Shmuel, were you relying on the fact that Shmuel says, Maliach Hareu Kiroteach, Kavush Hareu Kibivushal? So now what does this mean? Shmuel made this statement. So Rav Acha is coming to Ravina and saying, the fact that you forbade this meat that was salted with the Gina Nashe, is it because you rely on Shmuel who said, salting it is like Roteach, putting something, now we're going to have to see. Roteach you would have thought is like cooking. But it can't be cooking, we're going to see, because it says, kavush hareyu kemevushal, right? And if you make the statement, maliach is like roteach, kavush is like mevushal, then roteach clearly isn't mevushal. Okay, the Gemara is going to say that soon. But the assumption is that roteach is kind of putting something hot next to it, okay, or boiling it somehow. So maliach, salting something, is like roteach. Now, if you want, now he's going to continue. I'll skip the second part for a minute. We'll come back to it in a minute. But I just want to finish the train of thought. If you're holding like Shmuel, who says maliach is like roteach, v'hamar Shmuel lo shanu ela shenit bashelba aval nitzlaba kolef ochel ad shemegia lagid. He's assuming that roteach is like tzli because it's like putting something very hot next to it. And if you're holding like Shmuel, this is Maliach, is like Roteach, but Shmuel himself said, if you roast it with the Gira Nasheh, it's not forbidden, right? Just Kedei Klipa according to Tosfot, or, you know, not even Kedei Klipa according to the Pshat. So how could you possibly forbid it? Now I'm just going to explain what is Kavush Hareyu Kemevushal. This is that pickling something is as if you cooked it. So if you pickle something, then let's say, you know, you pickle something, it takes on whatever it was pickled in. So it's as if it was cooked up in it and the flavors are mixed in. Okay, so these are two important things because we usually think of kashrus as boiling, that's, you know, bringing something up to a high temperature. But salting and pickling also have characteristics of, again, salting is like roteach, which we'll see how we define roteach. Right now they're assuming it's like tzli. And kavush is like cooking. So, again, Rav Acha says to Ravina, why did you forbid this Gira Nasheh that was salted, the meat that was salted with the Gira Nasheh. If you're holding like Shmuel, the Maliach is like Roteach, and Roteach is Tzli, then Shmuel says that's fine. V'chi tema mai ki Roteach de ka'amar, Roteach de mevushal, and if you want to say maybe Roteach means cooking, v'hami de ka'amar kavusha reu ki mevushal, mikhlal de Roteach de Tzli ka'amar. So and then he says, right, and you can't say, this is what I already said before, because I couldn't explain it without saying this, that Roteach can't possibly be mevushal, otherwise that statement of Shmuel makes no sense, because he said kavush is like mevushal. And therefore it must be roteach is tzli, and therefore it must be allowed according to Shmuel, and therefore kashya. So Ravina is left with a siman sheila, why did he forbid this meat that was salted with the Gid HaNasheh? Okay, new thing. Again, still within the laws of Bitul, Amar Rabbi Chanina, keshehen mesha'arin, when you figure out the shishim, how do you calculate shishim? So, mesha'arim, berotev, ubekipa, ubechatichot, ubekdera. You take everything there is there. You take the juice, the gravy. You take the residue that's like stuck at the bottom of the pot. You take the chatichot of whatever meat is in there or whatever it might be. And you take the pot itself. Okay, so now the pot itself becomes the problem. How exactly do you measure the pot? So, right, then you take all those things, you add it up, and you see, is there shishim of whatever forbidden fell into it? So when it comes to the k'deira, ika da'amre b'k'deira atzma, some people say that you take all the measurements of the k'deira, like the surface area of the entire pot. The ika da'amre b'may de'bala k'deira, that's what we actually paskin, that it's whatever was swallowed up into the pot. Now, how do you figure that out? So it seems you figure this out by... If you had some meat in the pot before cooking, and the meat shriveled up, like you lost, right, there was a certain measurement of meat before, and now there's less measurement of the meat, so you assume that amount was swallowed up into the pot. Okay. Amar Rabbi Avahu, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Kol isurin shebetorah, misharin kihilu hem batzal v'kaflot. If you remember, we said the other day, that I think it was yesterday, that it's halacha l'moshe misinai, that when it comes to gira nasheh, how do we assess taste? We say it's based on kibasar belefet. You remember that? That was the Mishnah. The Mishnah said ketsa b'sharin ota kibasar belefet. We say we're going to assess it by would this amount of ghee, if it were meat, give flavor into a turnip. So now they're going to say all other shirim, when we figure out shishim, we figure out, interestingly, whether an onion or... I think it's a leek, or is that translated by you? A leek? How much flavor, whether they would give flavor. Now think about it. Batzal and a leek give a lot of flavor with just a little bit of an amount. So they say that's how we come up with the amount of whether an onion of this size, this is again without shishim, right? Shishim is going to be shishim. But if you assess the flavor of how much of something inside of something else, so you assess it by would an onion give this amount of flavor into this amount of stuff. Amar le Rabbi Abba la Abaye, the l'sharina would peel pelim v'tavlin, dafilu be'elef lo betelim. Why are you saying, if you're saying something really strong, why don't you say, go even farther, right? We think onion is really strong, but what's even farther? Spices, right? Take pepper spice, or some other spice, they won't even be batel be'elef. They're known, they're so strong that they give flavor into anything. So Amar Le, Shiru Chachamim De'ein Notein Tam B'Yisurin Yoter MiBatzal V'Kaflot. This is a bit of a strange line, but Abaye says to him, the rabbis assess that nothing gives flavor more than Batzal V'Kaflot. Now what could that mean? You can't say that peel pulling don't give more flavor than Batzal V'Kaflot. It doesn't mean that. What it means is if we're going to take any typical item, unless we know that it's as strong as peel pulling, like if we have a spice that's very strong, then obviously we'll assess it like pilpuli. But anything else that we don't know, it's super, super strong, right? This seems to be the pshat here. Then we're going to say it's like batzal and kaflot, leeks and onions, and not, we don't have to assume that it's as strong as pepper and spices that are strong and say that it's, you know, going to afilu be'elef, it won't be batel. Okay. Amar Rav Nachman. Gid b'shishim. Here we get to really nitpicky stuff, which is, when we talk about shishim, you have a gid, it's batel b'shishim, but that doesn't include the gid isn't included in the shishim. It means one thing of gid to 60 parts, right? You might have thought it was like 1 to 59 or something, right? Shishim is not part, the gid is not part of the minyan of shishim, okay? So, you would need 60 keneged the gid to cancel it out. Kechal b'shishim. Okay, now we're going to get into an interesting case of an udder. An udder is essentially part of the meat of the cow. But inside the udder is milk. So if you cooked an udder that still had milk in it, then we would say that that's batel b'shishim. Okay? But kechal min haminyan. But the kechal, since the udder is meat, so what are we going to do? We're going to assess how big the kechal was. But it's canceled because the kal is really made, the udder is made up of what's inside the udder. So therefore, we're going to say you need one kal to 59 parts of meat, you know, or you know, the udder is going to count in the count of shishim, and it's going to count in the count of, you know, the other side. It's kind of this double thing. And that's because the khal itself is meat, but the what's in it is milk. So therefore, the khal sides on the side of both being counted as the shishim, and it's also counted as the milk in it, you know, on the other side. We'll get a little more into khal in a minute. Beitza b'shishim, ve'ein beitza min aminyan. Okay, we'll get into the beitza tomorrow, but a beitza is canceled in shishim, but it's not counted as part of the shishim, like the gid hanashem. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak b'reid Rav Masharshia, u'khal atzmo asur. So now what happens? You have this udder full of milk, you put it into a pot, right, of a meat stew, and it starts cooking. What happens as it cooks? The milk comes out of the udder, and the milk can be batel b'shishim in the bigger mixture. However, as that's happening, it's a two-way street. Meat flavor is coming into the milk that's in the udder. So the udder itself becomes forbidden because there's not shishim in the milk in the udder to cancel out the meat. So therefore, it's this crazy case where the udder gets canceled into the meat, right? What's in the udder kind of comes out of the udder and gets canceled into the meat. But the udder itself becomes forbidden because it, now what's even more interesting, eventually we assume as it cooks, all the meat comes out, all the milk comes out of the udder. So you end up with an udder that's empty, but it was usser, you know, it's really, it doesn't have basar b'chalav anymore because everything eventually came out. But since as it, when it went in there, it started as isser because meat flavor started coming in and trafed up the milk inside. So the udder itself becomes forbidden. Akite kachet, they say, v'nafa l'kdera acheret oser. If it falls into another pot, and let's say there's other udders there, as our Mishnah said, if there's a bunch of chatichot of meat, if you can't identify which one it is, it forbids all those pieces of meat. So likewise, this udder will forbid all other, right, in a combination, it will forbid all the other udders, even though there's really no milk inside anymore. It's a very interesting case. Okay, so everybody follows that it kind of, right, the as the milk was coming out, meat was coming in, and that forbade the udder. Amar Rav Ashi, ki avinan be Rav Kahana. When I was at Rav Kahana's house, he bailan, they asked him, ki misharinan bidi de misharinan, o b'may din nafak mine misharinan. When we count now, what do we count? Do we count how much milk was inside the udder, or do we count the size of the udder? When we try to say, is it batal b'shishim, what's the amount that we use? Because really, it's not the udder itself, it's the milk that's in the udder that's problematic. So do we assess the amount based on the milk inside, or do we assess it based on the size of the udder? So the Gemara says, Pshita dibidide misharinan. It's obvious that we actually do it by the size of the udder. Why? How are we going to know exactly how much milk is in that udder? It's very hard to measure because, first of all, right, you haven't squeezed it out and you don't know exactly how much is in there. Okay, the Ramban says here something very interesting. He says that the reason why they said this is because you can't give everybody the opportunity, and this goes back to the whole subjective nature of this. If we allow people to just assess how much milk is in the udder, everyone's going to do it kefi re'u deinav, like what he thinks. And then we're going to end up, right, he says, in kein natata Torah l'chol echad v'echad biyado, right? In other words, everyone's going to be able to just make their own adjustments. And he says, v'chol midah chachamim hein l'sha'er b'yosher v'hashva'a v'latet midah chad l'kulam. The reason why the rabbis gave shirim is to have people be honest and straight and to just keep everything clear and equal, almost like equal, right? Equal rights to everybody, equal. Everything's equal so that nobody takes advantage and does their own thing. This is interesting. That's why he says, that's the reason he gives for this halacha. So now they say, if that's the case, that we assess it based on the size of the udder, ela me'ata nafal k'deira acheret lo ye'aser. But then, according to this, if it falls into another k'deira, it shouldn't be forbidden because, I struggled with one second, the logic being that if, right, the assumption here that we assess it by the udder is that all the milk must have come out, right? That's the assumption. So we're assessing by like the largest amount because all the milk must have come out. So if all the milk must have come out, then how can we, right, nafalak de'acheret lo yaser? Then we should view this other. As we said before, it seems strange. Why is the other forbidden? If we took, if we assume that all the milk came out, because we're sharing in the size of the udder itself, then the udder itself should be mutar. So what are the answer? Kevan da'amar of Yitzchak b'reit d'mar m'shar she'ukhal atzmo asur shavye rabbanan kechaticha d'nevela. In other words, they say, maybe logically you're saying what is what you're saying is right, but we don't rely on this. You know, it's not because of this. It's because we rely on what Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Masharshia said, Bereid Rabbi Masharshia said, that the Kal Atzmo is Asur, that the rabbis viewed this. Again, here you have this strange case where even though eventually all the milk comes out, since at an earlier given stage, this is just what we said before, the milk had become asur, at that point this was considered a chatichav nevela, because it had a mixture of basar b'chalav in it. Even though maybe everything at this point is out, doesn't make a difference. At that point it was a chatichav nevela, and as we said, like in the Mishnah, once a chatichav nevela gets mixed up with other chatichot of nevela, it's not batel, right? It keeps its usur, and even if it falls into another group of nevelot, we have to assume they're all forbidden. Okay, that's it for today.